Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC, and in the eternal debate between believers and non-believers, my next guest doesn't just argue the case for atheism. He hasn't written a theology book. He argues that atheism helped create the modern world. He has written a history book. You may know NYU Media Studies professor Mitchell Stevens from his past books, including A History of News and The Rise of the Image, The Fall of the Word. Now he's written Imagine There's No Heaven, How Atheism Helped Create the Modern World. Mitchell Stevens, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be back here.
Your book begins with Denis Diderot in 18th century France, who gave us perhaps the first modern encyclopedia. He came to Paris as a student of the Jesuits, didn't he?
He did. He was raised religious and remained religious, but Paris started wearing away on his beliefs, and he made a progression through deism all the way to atheism.
And Diderot wrote Atheist Philosophy, as you remind us. He spent time in prison for it, as you remind us. But on his seminal accomplishment of creating an encyclopedia, what's the relevance? A believer in God could have done it, or a believer in no God, couldn't they have?
Well, a lot of the people that worked on the great encyclopedia in 18th century France were non-believers, and I think that's no coincidence. At some point, Diderot says that the principle behind it is that everything must be questioned. And when you're questioning everything, you're going to question monarchy, which these people certainly were doing, but you're also questioning religion. And I think if you believe that all truth was specified in some holy book somewhere a couple of thousand years ago, it's very hard to reinvestigate and to try to understand the natural world.
And you then take us back to ancient Greece in a chapter titled Disbelief and Learning Arrive Together in Greece. Do you argue that atheism was responsible for the advances in knowledge and society and democracy that we generally attribute to the ancient Greeks?
Well, it is remarkable the extent to which atheism and learning tend to go together. Again, because if you're going to believe in the supernatural, it's hard to investigate the natural. If you believe there's another world where people are headed, it's hard to really try to understand and improve this world.
But didn't the ancient Greeks mostly believe in Greek mythology, their polytheistic religion with Zeus and Athena and that whole cast of character gods?
Well, obviously a lot of the people there, including Plato and Socrates, were believers, but a surprising number of them were not. I mean, the one I focus on a lot is Thucydides, the great historian, who really wanted to explain what happened, to give a clear understanding, as he put it, of what happened without recourse to miracles, without recourse to prophecies. He talked about the plague that swept through Athens and dismissed the faith healers and all the bizarre explanations people had. And I think sweeping away these supernatural explanations, as some people did, as many people did in ancient Athens, is crucial for the burst of learning that happened there.
And listeners, if you want to weigh in from any perspective or ask a question about the thesis here that atheism helped create the modern world with NYU Media Studies Professor Mitchell Stevens, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And that, of course, is our on-air number, not our pledge line. And we'll never ask you for money while we're talking content and meaning on the radio, 212-433-9692. Let me take a step back from the particulars in your book and ask why you wrote a history of how atheism helped create the modern world, like it's Atheist History Month or something. Do you think atheist contributions as atheists are overlooked?
I think that's definitely the case. I think you could argue that this has really been one of the most important and fertile ideas in human history. I mean, it's there, as we were discussing, in ancient Greece. It's there in the Enlightenment. It's there behind the scenes in Galileo's trial. I mean, it's there when Newton who was a believer, but managed to leave any mention of the deity out of his great book, Understanding Gravity and Finding a Mathematical Explanation for the Cosmos. It's there in the 20th century in Freud and modernism. It comes up in so many places, and I think it comes up for a reason, because it clears away things that make progress possible.
And you also argue that atheists help bring about our modern notions of liberty and democracy, including the founding of the United States. But wasn't the U.S. founded largely by religious people fleeing religious persecution in England, looking for the freedom to practice minority religions, not the goal of abandoning religion?
Well, religion obviously was a very vigorous thing in the early United States, but the people who founded the United States, the founding fathers and the occasional mother or two, were Enlightenment people. George Washington said that the American Revolution was a product of the Enlightenment. These were people who were influenced by Voltaire and to some extent by Diderot, and they pursued these ideas in very important ways. I mean, Madison did not want to talk about religion. Jefferson did not want to talk about his religion. There's no mention of God in the U.S. Constitution.
Do you think believers and non-believers contributed in different ways to Enlightenment ideas, including democracy? Religious believers in democracy talk about our God-given rights. Jesus was an activist for social justice, etc. So did some of each contribute and in different ways?
Well, I don't want to slight the contributions of religion to human history. I think there have been major steps forward in moral thinking, obviously in political thinking, as well as in art and so many other areas that can be credited to religion. And I do believe that these ideas have played an important role. But, we have thousands of books talking about the contributions of religion. We have thousands of books talking about the histories of various religions. I think this one idea, this one very important idea, has tended to be overlooked.
Let's take a call. Brian in Harlem. You're on WNYC. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. I missed a little bit of the discussion, but I just wondered if your guest, and I apologize for not remembering the name,
Mitchell Stevens,
has studied or has read Ian McGilchrist's work on brain development.
What about it?
Brain.
What about it?
Yeah, whether he thinks it's valid in The Master and His Emissary, because he talks about the evolution of culture with brain development and right half and left half function.
And does that inform the question of the role of atheism in the modern world?
Oh, yeah, because it's about the development and the domination of science and reason in our world, which is left brain centered, because that's where our writing is centered in our laws develop, et cetera, versus the right half of the brain where we intake everything that goes on in the world. That's where intake is.
Brian, thank you very much. Is this on your radar screen? Do you want to get into the battle between the two halves of the brain?
I'm not a partisan in that struggle, but I will say this. I mean, we know that that there has never been a human society without religion. So there's something basic about this desire to come up with theories to explain the world in human beings. But I think there's always in human beings, and I think this is just as basic, a doubt, an impulse to doubt, to question these religious ideas. And one of the fascinating things I found in doing this research was when it's possible to look, when somebody wrote it down, when the texts weren't burned, when people were allowed to say something, how frequently anti-religious ideas come up, even in preliterate societies, even in medieval Europe.
Edward in Bayonne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Edward.
Yes, I just wanted to say that, being an atheist allowed for people to study the natural world is just ridiculous. One doesn't have to be exclusive of the other. And, there are books like The Hidden Face of God by physicists. I mean, the discoveries of quantum physics, it's almost like, not believing in the supernatural is so passé. One is not exclusive. People, you have scientists now, delving into this supernatural from a naturalist standpoint. So, I mean, that is just ridiculous. One doesn't have to be exclusive of the other.
Well, it's a really fascinating point, and he's right. There are these books on, you know, the Zen of physics and all of this stuff where the supernatural and the natural meet, I think, especially in the realm of physics. So where does that fit into your maybe more either-or paradigm?
No, that's certainly true. There are physicists who do believe things. There are scientists of all sorts who do believe in various religions. And, you know, Newton was religious in his way. But overwhelmingly, scientists today are not religious. And I think there have been a number of instances in human history where religion has interfered with the development of science, going back to Galileo and Copernicus and their effort to challenge the biblical notion that the sun revolved around the earth. And I think in order to really test things and not take things just on authority, the authority of the Bible, the authority of religious leaders, people need to separate themselves to some extent from religion.
Mitchell Stevens with us, author of Imagine There's No Heaven, How Atheism Helped Create the Modern World. Kirkus Reviews listed some of the figures from history you refer to in the book for short takes. So let's do sort of a lightning round with you based on this list. Socrates, not an atheist, correct?
Yes, Socrates believed he heard the voice of God, but Socrates was a great questioner, so he's not unrelated to this story.
How does Socrates fit into your thesis then?
Well, I don't spend a lot of time talking about him. I mean, he had a sense of the ideal, at least as Plato presented him, which really is not an atheist notion. But the fact that he was going around, apparently quite an unpleasant fellow to meet on a path in Athens, asking all these obnoxious questions, played a role in that period in Athens when a lot was being questioned and some people went further in their questioning than he did.
Shakespeare, who played it close to the doublet. How about Shakespeare?
Well, you know, we know so little about Shakespeare. I worked hard to try to figure out whether there were hints of atheism in him. And in some sense, all great human ideas are in Shakespeare. At some point, you can say, the whole notion of to die, to sleep no more is a questioning of the afterlife. There are characters in Shakespeare, in Lear, who reject religion, of course, because of the time this was written. They have to be set straight at some point and die at some point. So this debate is going on in Shakespeare.
Newton, who swung both ways, says Kirkus. Did he?
I think Newton was a believer in some sort of religion. He certainly investigated alchemy with enthusiasm that seems strange to his modern followers. But he was also questioning certain basics of religion. He taught at Trinity College, but he seemed to reject the Trinity. He was working out his own ideas in religion. And for this man who got so much right about the heavens, I think it's really interesting that he was never able to come up with a discussion of religion that satisfied him.
Lesser known, Jean Meslier, a 17th century priest who changed his mind.
I went back and visited his church recently in France. This man was a small village priest. We don't know that he ever even went into Paris. And when he died, he left behind four handwritten copies of a manuscript, not only questioning everything that he'd preached about the Catholic religion, but questioning all religion. And Voltaire reprinted this. Voltaire was fascinated by him, and he contributed a lot to the Enlightenment that followed.
Mike in Jersey City, you're on WNYC with Mitchell Stevens. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi there, Brian. Two simple things. The first is that I think that the point your guest is making is really good. I think what he's talking about is skepticism, which is not a function of being an atheist. In fact, an atheist draws a conclusion that is almost impossible to draw, as opposed to an agnostic that does not. Rene Descartes, sort of the father of all modern skeptics, was not an atheist. That's the therefore I am guy who started from having, how could he reduce, deal with everything being uncertain? The second point, which is, I'd be curious to hear you guys comment on that. The second point, though, and it's a rare opportunity, this thing about Galileo and the church. I'd like to ask your guest this question, okay? Galileo was brought up by the church. It was an issue of authority, but the real issue had to do with the question of whether Galileo could teach what he was teaching as theory or as fact. And the two facts that Galileo wanted to teach were the one we all hear about today, which is that the Earth revolves around the sun, and also that the sun was the center of the universe. I don't know if the sun is the universe, but it probably isn't. And so the second question I'd ask your guest is, who is being more scientific? The guy saying that Galileo, based on relatively slim evidence, should teach what he had to teach as a theory, or Galileo, who was going to insist it should be taught as a fact, and in fact was wrong on one of his facts?
Mike, thank you. Well, you put a lot of interesting stuff on the table. Let me go back to his first thing first, which is, why not skepticism? Why not, for that matter, agnosticism for your starting point, for your posture, rather than atheism, which is a kind of certainty in perhaps something that cannot be known?
Well, atheism is a certainty in the sense that it says it is extremely unlikely there could be such a thing. Bertrand Russell talked about the teapot revolving around Venus. Do we know that there isn't one? Of course, we can never prove entirely that there isn't some odd thing like that. I mean, it's impossible to prove the negative that somewhere in the universe there might be something we don't understand hiding. But, you know, as Bertrand Russell said, most of the people in this book would believe it seems extremely unlikely. And so, I mean, is that atheism rather than agnosticism? I think it is. And skepticism, the kind of skepticism that I think is really important for this book is called academic skepticism, a term that goes back to Greece, which doesn't say that it's impossible to understand anything. It says we should look for what's plausible. And that's really what's running through this book. That's the idea that's created the modern world, and that's the idea behind atheism.
And briefly on his Galileo question?
Galileo was not insisting on one view of the universe. He was very careful, and he was questioning, and nor was it really a question of his teachings. It was a question of some writings he had done where he dared to just raise the possibility that Copernicus's view of the way the heavens work might be correct.
So where is society today? You have a chapter called Religion Unregarded, in which you describe members of society who are not becoming atheists so much as simply becoming indifferent to religion, like the person who was asked, do you believe in God? Yes. Do you believe in God who makes things happen on earth? No, just the ordinary one. Ha. Why was that such a telling anecdote for you?
I think it's a wonderful anecdote because it seems to be proving something that the poet Shelley, who's a great atheist in the early 19th century, said, which is that religion won't be overthrown. It'll just become unregarded. And I think we're seeing a little of that. Religion is not fading because everyone is announcing that they're atheists. Religion is just becoming a lot less important in people's lives. Religions ask less of us than they used to. Religions are something that we seem to be able to exchange as we switch maybe from the religion we were born in to becoming vegetarians, to maybe trying some sort of New Age faith, to maybe going back to another. Religion doesn't run as deep as it used to.
Let me get you one more 2-minute interaction with, in this case, an Episcopal priest, Keith in New Rochelle. Keith, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling us.
How are you?
Okay.
Yeah, this dichotomy between the notion of questioning and reason, and somehow that being the definition of religion, is simply completely inaccurate. In fact, the people that were listed that the author was talking about earlier were people that lived in the realm of reason, observation, and a religious understanding. What the Age of Reason did was break that connection of deep and profound understanding.
For worse, are you saying?
I didn't hear what you just said.
Broke that connection for the worse?
Correct, correct.
Because?
Well, it's because this is what human beings do throughout history. There was a comment about the fraying of religion's requirements and demands upon us. Well, the same thing happened during the Age of Reason. Life is complex. And the way poets and artists and theologians and religious people are able to give meaning and shape and dynamism to life is part of what defines us as human beings.
Keith, thank you very much. And Mitchell, one last word, and interesting that he throws poets and other artists in there as people who may not be coming from a place of reason, but who also add meaning to life, as he would say, do religionists.
Well, first of all, I'm glad he called in, and it's wonderful. I think we need more conversations like this between the religious and the non-religious. I talk in my book about the conflict between faith and religion, and they have come into conflict at various points. But I do want to make clear that the atheists I talk about in this book were certainly capable of wonder at life. They were certainly capable of poetry. Shelley is a classic example. They were certainly capable of art, like Picasso and Joyce and so many others. And I don't think giving up a belief in the authority of some church or in the existence of a supernatural being means you have to give up a belief in wonder and awe.
Mitchell Stevens, NYU Media Studies professor and now the author of Imagine There's No Heaven, How Atheism Helped Create the Modern World. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. Stay with us.